Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are. Shalom Aleichem, Masalam Aleichem, Namaste, Pak Satnam, Sat Sri Akal, Tashi Dalek, Ho Lila Tanyan Wase Yake. Hello, may everything be well with you as it is with me. And now, as I do each day at the beginning of each class, I will recite the Kaddish for the dead and the mourners of the dead. Please bow your heads, close your eyes, and envision someone whom you've loved who has passed away. And in doing so, you will honor that person's life and memory, and you will bring them into your consciousness, the light of your consciousness. Yiskadal v'yishkadash shmei rabo, bomo divero kiruse, v'yamlik malkase, v'kaya kon uvyo mekon, uvkaya dekol beis Yisrael, v'hagalo uviz man koriev, v'yimru amen. Yehe shmei rabo mevorak leolam uleome omayo, yisbarak v'yistabak v'yisbarar v'yisrumam, v'yisnase v'yisadar v'yisale v'yishalal, Shmei du kecho beraku, le'elo, min kol berkaso vishoroso, tushbekoso venekamoso da amirom beomo, ve'imru omen. Yehe shlomo rabo min shemayo, ve'kayim aleinu ve'al kol Yisrael ve'imru omen. Ose shalom bimromov, huyashe shalom, aleinu ve'al kol Yisrael ve'imru omen. Thank you very much. Now then, I concluded our last shiur, by talking about the temporary and illusory nature of life. And I was talking about the illusory nature of the world and how in Vedanta Hinduism, the name for that is Maya, which means illusion. And I talked about, to a great extent actually, both of these concepts, about delusion, the state of delusion that human beings, as a default condition, as the default state of consciousness human beings are in. And that is a state of delusion, meaning, or in Vedanta Hinduism, samsara, which means to wander. And I likened it to a state of sleeping or sleepwalking. It is a state of consciousness in which one accepts Maya, that means the illusion of reality of the temporal physical world, the world of phenomena, the world of materiality, or as I refer to it Kabbalistically, the world of forms and names. The state of samsara is where one believes that the illusion of reality, that those things are, that the Maya is real, that these things have substance to them, that they are substantial, that they have substance. That they are not just an illusion which our mind perceives and concludes is a reality. Okay. And I concluded by saying that in our next class, which is today's class, we would talk about the concepts, a concept of identity. And I want to begin that discussion by further differentiating between what is actual and what is non-actual. Okay, what is essential and what is conditional? What is being and what is conditional being? Essential being versus conditional being. I think that's the terms I'll settle on for that. And I'm going to start by reading two sentences taken from a book called 138 Openings of Wisdom, written by Rabbi Moshe Chaim Luzzatto, also known as the Ramchal, in the 1700s, the 18th century, a great Kabbalist, a genius of a man, about whom we will talk a little bit, a great deal more a little bit later. And anyway, in this book titled 138 Openings of Wisdom, which is a systematic organization and presentation of Kabbalistic teaching up to his time, which incorporates Lurianic Kabbalah in it, by the way. Excellent, excellent book. But not for the neophyte. Okay. In opening 18, part 1, page 65, he says, and you, I hope, are going to like this as much as I like it. And this is something that I just have to smile at when I think about, because it is so representative of the Ramchal. He is known as the great organizer, the great systematizer. He had this gift in which he was able to take many disparate things and distill out of them the proper categories and classifications, and then organize those in a way that can be presented to common people such as myself and you in a way that makes sense. Whereas before it was all chaos and confusion, now it makes sense. Anyway, here is a statement, two sentences, which I think is both true and shows the boldness of the Ramchal. Quote, the entire purpose of the wisdom of Kabbalah is to understand the particular root of each of the different phenomena we find in the world. Anything that can exist without being dependent on something else must have its own root. I'll read that again. And I love this because here he's saying, here's the entire purpose of the wisdom of Kabbalah. He just comes right out and says it, the very first clause of this statement. The entire purpose of the wisdom of Kabbalah. And this is something you can take home with you today. If you don't know anything else, if you didn't learn anything else today, here's something that you can say, hey, today I learned what the purpose of Kabbalah is. The purpose of all the teachings of Kabbalah is to understand the particular root of each of the different phenomena we find in the world. Anything that can exist without being dependent on something else must have its own root. Baruch Hashem. All right, so right away we see that there are two types of being. Right? We have things that exist without being dependent on something else, and things that exist while being dependent. They depend on something else for their existence. So there's two types of being. Okay? And I'm going to tell you now that they are those things which are created and that which creates them. Those are the two types of being. The creator and everything else. That which is created. Okay? What the Ramchal is saying here is that nothing created exists on its own. In practical terms, it means we're all going to pass away. This world, our sun and solar system, all the stars in our galaxy, all the galaxies in the universe, all the universes that we that exist that the string theorists, the particle physicists, tell us now exist in parallel to our universe. We can't see them, but we know now theoretically that they exist, an infinite number of universes in which all potential things are being worked out, are coming into existence. Okay, all of these things will cease to exist. They will just go away someday. Why? Because their existence is conditional. They depend for their continued existence on that which is non-conditional or essential. That which is we call spiritually and religiously the Creator, God. Okay, we who are conditional, we who have been created, are what the philosophers call non-essential or conditional. Meaning we exist only because something greater than us causes or wills us to exist. And our continued existence, moreover, is dependent on or conditional to the will of this greater being, which, of course, is the Creator God. Okay, now that's one category. That's the category of all beings which are conditional and non-essential. The ones who find their root or cause in another being. Okay? Now this other being is God. Only God exists on its own. It is in the fundamental nature of God to exist. God has no choice but to exist. He may be God, but he has never not existed. God is eternal. Existence is the essence or essential character of God. So, the essence of God is existence. That means the essence of God is being. Being is existence. Okay, so the essential character of God or essence of God is existence. Or being. Now, this fundamental truth about existence has been expressed, and I find great interest, I take great interest in this, has been expressed both philosophically and spiritually. There's always been this dichotomy between the mystics and the philosophers. On the one hand, we have the philosophers who put a great deal of stock into, and of course what we're talking about right here now, the philosophers, whenever it comes to talking about God and existence and stuff, it moves into the realm of what they call metaphysics. Okay? Metaphysics just being a term that came about accidentally when the librarians in the great library at Alexandria, before it was burned to the ground by the Christian zealots, when they were classifying books on different topics, and they were putting the great books of the philosophers up, they put the books that dealt with the subject of God and man and the relationship of God and man and the books about existence and the topics like this, they just shelved them on the shelf following the books on the topics of physics. So they were in a section called metaphysics. Okay, so the subject of metaphysics got its name just because that's where the books were shelved. They were shelved on the shelf, put on the shelf after, right immediately following the topic of physics. Interesting little side fact there. Okay, but there's always been this dichotomy between the hard physicists and the metaphysicists, and a further dichotomy between the philosophers who study and think about and write down their thoughts and findings and theories, and the theologians and the mystics. Okay, and so, but what I'm going to show you today is I'm going to show you how both how the fundamental truth about existence being on two levels that I just talked about, the essential being, which is God, and which we call God, and the non-essential conditional beings, which means, or existences, which means everything else, the universe and everything in it and us, that dual nature of existence, but being related, with one being the cause of the other, and the other, the created, being dependent upon the will, continued goodwill of the creator. How that has been expressed both by the philosophers, I guess I'd say the metaphysicists, and by the great teachers of spirituality, the mystics, the theologians. And I'm going to do that by showing you some of the statements and propositions put forward by a great philosopher of the 17th century. His name was Baruch Spinoza. He was he lived from 16. Well, I'm going to contrast his beliefs, not contrast. I'm going to show you how similar they are to the beliefs of a man who I quoted at the beginning here, which is Rabbi Moshe Chaim Luzzatto. As he, a great Kabbalist and teacher, and what he taught, and he lived between 1707 and 1746, about not quite a century later, but how similar their views are on this dichotomy of being, how there's two different types of being, one dependent upon the other, or conditioned upon the other, a creator and a creature. Okay, so let's consider the philosopher first. And they're both Jews. There's a lot of similarity between these two men in their lives. Baruch Spinoza was a Jew. Rabbi Moshe Chaim Luzzatto was a Jew. Both lived in Amsterdam for a great deal of their lives. Both of their lives were short lives. Baruch Spinoza lived from 1632 until 1677, so that's what, 45 years, depending on the month of birth and death. And Rabbi Moshe Chaim Luzzatto, the Ramchal, lived between 1707 and 1746. So what is that? 39 years. Both lives cut short. Okay. Baruch Spinoza, his avocation, what he dedicated his life to, was philosophy. But what his occupation was he was a lens grinder. He was like an optician. He made lenses for people to look through for spectacles and for telescopes and for magnifying glasses. So he was a lens polisher, a lens grinder. He constructed them from scratch. And that's how he made his living. Rabbi, the Ramchal, not quite a century later, in the same city of Amsterdam, made his living as, his avocation, of course, was he was a theologian. He was a Kabbalist, a teacher, an author, just as Baruch Spinoza was an author. Okay, religious texts on the part of Luzzatto, philosophical texts on the part of Spinoza. Okay, but what was the occupation of the Ramchal? He was a gem cutter in the same city, in Amsterdam. So one was a man who cut, formed, and polished lenses. That was Spinoza, and the other was Luzzatto, was a man who cut, and, well, at least cut gems. I would imagine he also polished them. Okay. Spinoza, when he was a young man, in 1656, so that would put him about at the age of 23 or 24, was excommunicated by the Dutch Jewish authorities for reasons that even to this day remain very, very abstract and I'm going to venture to say almost impenetrable. But we have a quote that has come down from that time period. He was excommunicated for, quote, abominable heresies which he practices and teaches, end quote. Abominable heresies which he practices and teaches. So we don't know what those are, but if we look to his philosophy, we can try to figure that out. Okay, the Ramchal also got in trouble with the Orthodox rabbis. He, I believe, and I get this from my teacher, Reb Yaakov Leib HaKohen, I believe he told us, students, that the Ramchal was, that there were either efforts underway or that he was threatened with excommunication by the Orthodox rabbis for what he was teaching, which was essentially Kabbalah. And they did not like Kabbalah. And the reason they didn't like Kabbalah is because this is a mere 50 or 60 years after what the Orthodox rabbis considered to be a hugely embarrassing and shameful episode with Shabtai Zvi, the only man ever acknowledged and accepted by the entire of the Jewish diaspora to be the Mashiach, the Messiah. And then, of course, he committed apostasy in front of the Sultan, the great Sultan of the Turkish Ottoman Empire in Constantinople, and converted, meaning he converted to Islam. And of course, the Jewish people could not understand this. Now we who are Sabbateans, we who are Neo-Sabbateans, let me put it that way, because Sabbateanism has been changing too. And there are different groups within Sabbateanism, within the Dogma, who have different views as to Shabtai Zvi. But we don't believe that he was a false Messiah, which is what the Orthodox people consider Shabtai Zvi to be. We consider him to be a failed Messiah. But I'm not going to go into a discussion right now, a theological discussion of what the Messiah is. Okay, because that's a subject of many, many books. Okay, but anyway, suffice it to say, Orthodox rabbis were mortified by the apostasy of Shabtai Zvi, because, as I said, the entire Jewish world accepted that Shabtai Zvi was the Messiah. And they expected everything to change. They expected it to be the beginning of Messianic times, the beginning of the last days. And they expected all of them to be called back to the reestablishment of Jerusalem and the land of Israel to be reestablished, and the yoke of oppression of all the Gentile countries to be thrown off, and a great kingdom of Messiah to be established. And of course, that didn't happen. And instead of that, not only didn't that happen, but like the worst opposite thing you can imagine, that they could imagine happening, and that was that he apparently, Shabtai Zvi, apparently rejected Judaism in its entirety and took on the robes, literally put on a hat, the special turban, that indicates that he was now a follower of Muhammad, Islam. And that just blew all their minds. I couldn't deal with that. To this day, in some encyclopedias, Jewish encyclopedias, you can look in the index under the index of Jewish famous Jewish people, and you can find Shabtai Zvi, and you'll find a page, and you can thumb through those pages, and you'll turn there, and you get to there, and what you find is a blank page, symbolic of his being erased. Okay. So, the Orthodox Jews and the Orthodox rabbis, not the Jews themselves, but not the common people, but the rabbis at the time, attributed all of this messianic fervor, this vulnerability, this betrayal that they felt, that this feeling that they'd been made the butt of some cosmic worldwide joke, they attributed to the fervor of messianism, which had been stirred by Isaac Luria's teachings. Remember Isaac Luria, probably the world's greatest Kabbalist, who lived in the 16th century in Safed in Galilee, in his circle? It took about 100 years for those teachings, 80 to 100 years, to get out all over the Jewish diaspora, especially in Eastern Europe, in Lithuania, Poland, Ukraine. And everybody get really excited about him. And then Shabtai Zvi comes along in 1666 and declares that he's the Messiah. And people start reporting miracles going on all over the place. Okay, so all of this spectacle and subsequent embarrassment that the Orthodox rabbis felt, they attributed to excessive fervor of messianism, which they saw coming from the Kabbalah of Isaac Luria. And so they said, Kabbalah, not good. Kabbalah's not a good thing to have in the hands of the people. So they imposed all kinds of rules and regulations, limiting it and restricting it. You had to be married before you could study the Zohar, which was the canonical text of Kabbalah, was the Zohar. Okay? You have to be married. You can't be single. You have to be over 40 years of age. Can't be younger. You have to have memorized, now get ready for this one, the entire Talmud. That consists I believe it's 23 or 33 volumes. It doesn't matter. You have to be able to look that Orthodox rabbi in the eye and say, yes, I've memorized all 23 or 33 volumes of the Talmud, and be prepared to be questioned in order for him to finally grudgingly say, all right, I guess you can read the Zohar. I guess you can study Kabbalah. Okay, these are rules and regulations that rabbinical Judaism set, that the rabbis, the Orthodox rabbis, set for the study of Kabbalah. So when Rabbi Moshe Chaim Luzzatto came along and studied Kabbalah, and learned Kabbalah at a really young age, and began writing books about it, and gathered his own circle of young men as his students or disciples, and was teaching them, the Orthodox rabbis got very concerned. And so he had to leave. I can't remember what town he was in at the time, but he had to leave, and I don't know if he went to Italy or where, but he traveled around and had to leave at least one place, at least one city. Otherwise, he would be facing excommunication. Okay, so we have all of these similarities, these commonalities between the lives of Rabbi Moshe Chaim Luzzatto, the Ramchal, the Kabbalist, the Jewish Kabbalist, who lived in the first half of the 18th century, and the great philosopher Baruch Spinoza, the Jew who lived in the middle of the century before, the 17th century, both living and working and practicing their avocations in the city of Amsterdam in the Netherlands. All right, now, let's get on to the subject matter of the common things that they taught. We're going to look right now at several of the propositions that are set forth in Baruch Spinoza's Ethics, first part, titled Of God. Okay? Proposition 7. It pertains to the nature of substance to exist. It pertains to the nature of substance to exist. Demonstration. There is nothing by which substance can be produced. It will therefore be the cause of itself. That is to say, its essence necessarily involves existence. Or in other words, it pertains to its nature to exist. Okay, QED. Okay, so the proposition number 7 is, it pertains to the nature of substance to exist. That's its fundamental essence, its nature to exist. It's like what we said about God, isn't it? Okay. Proposition 11, quote, God or substance consisting of infinite attributes, each one of which expresses eternal and infinite essence, necessarily exists. Whoa. God necessarily exists. That's what this metaphysician, this philosopher, Baruch Spinoza, is saying. God, and another way of describing God, because he has this as a parenthetical explanatory clause, he says God, comma, or substance. He just talked about substance, right? That it pertains to the nature of substance to exist. So he says God, and then parenthetically says, or substance consisting of infinite attributes. So God is substance consisting of infinite attributes. Each one of those infinite number of attributes, each one of those expresses eternal and infinite essence. So therefore, he says, God necessarily exists. Because God consists of an infinite number of attributes. God is a substance consisting of an infinite number of eternal attributes. And he just previously in Proposition 4 said that it pertains to the nature of substance to exist. So therefore, God necessarily exists. You see the chain of reasoning here. This is the nature of philosophy, okay? It's the building up from some... First Spinoza sets forth definitions, then so we all agree on what we're talking about. Then he sets forth some axioms. Axioms are assumptions that cannot be proven. You have to accept that they're correct. Sua sponte. Okay? On their own. They just are correct. If you don't agree with them, then you don't agree with the philosopher. But if you agree that certain axioms are true, then you can start building propositions, all of which constructs a theory. And in this case, what he's talking about is the theory of God. Okay. Proposition. So the first thing he said is it's in the nature of substance to exist. And the second thing is that because God is substance, and it's substance made up of an infinite number of attributes, all of which are eternal, therefore, it pertains to the nature of God to exist. Okay, Proposition 11. God or substance consisting of infinite attributes... Proposition 13. Substance absolutely infinite is indivisible. Substance absolutely infinite is indivisible. You can't break it up into pieces that you can exist separately because it's indivisible. You can't divide it. For one thing, think about that. If it's infinite, how could you pull something out and set it somewhere else? There is nowhere else. Okay? Proposition 14. And now we're getting into the big ones. Besides God, no substance can be, nor can be conceived. besides God, no substance can be, nor can be conceived. So there is nothing else besides God that is a substance. Okay? And what's the nature of substance? The nature of substance is that which exists. Okay? And besides God, no substance can exist, nor can be conceived. And then finally, in Proposition 15, he has a lot more propositions in this essay, okay, on God. But I've drawn out the ones that I want to use to make my point here. Proposition 15, whatever is in God, and nothing can either be or be conceived without God. Whatever is in God, and nothing can be or be conceived without God. And I have to tell you at this point that reading through the essay dealing with God in Spinoza's Ethics, I was struck by this question that just loomed large in my mind. What was it that he was that is about this? If what he was practicing and teaching is what he's expressed, as I have set forth here in these five propositions, if this is how he believes, what he believes of God and practices, I can't imagine how those could be considered to be abominable, quote, abominable heresies which he practices and teaches, end quote. Anyway, okay, so that's what Mr. Spinoza, who's a contemporary and friend of another great philosopher named Leibniz, they collaborated on optical questions, and Leibniz visited him, I think it was for a short period before Spinoza died. They were well acquainted with each other and colleagues and friends. Now, about not quite a century later, we have the Ramchal. In a book titled Derech Hashem, which is Hebrew for the Way of God, and in the very beginning of that book, part one, chapter one, titled The Creator. Okay, here's what the Ramchal, this is how he describes the creator. Section one. Every Jew must believe and know that there exists a first being without beginning or end, who brought all things into existence and continues to sustain them. This being is God. Section 2. It is furthermore necessary to know that God's true nature cannot be understood at all by any being other than himself. The only thing that we know about him is that he is perfect in every possible way and devoid of every conceivable deficiency. Now, as I'm reading these, try to see how similar they are to what Spinoza teaches in his metaphysical work. Section 3. It is also necessary to know that God's existence is imperative. It is absolutely impossible that he should cease to exist. And I would add, in fact, if God were to cease to exist, so too would the universe and we cease to exist. Okay, because we are the created beings whose existence depends upon the will of the Creator. Okay, section four. It is furthermore necessary to know that God's existence does not depend on anything else at all. His existence is intrinsically imperative. And then finally, section 5, it is likewise necessary to know that God is absolutely simple, having no parts to him. At the same time, all types of perfection are present in him, contained in his being, without being separate parts of it. Now that's all. That's not verbatim, but it's the same exact statements as Baruch Spinoza made. Here, Prop 14, besides God, no substance can be, nor can be conceived. Okay. And here it says, Lozado just said, at the same time, all types of perfection are present in him, contained in his being, without being separate parts of it. Okay, so besides God, and Prop 13, substance absolutely infinite is indivisible. Okay, so nothing can exist outside of God. And whatever is in God, whatever does exist, exists in God. And nothing can be or be conceived without, outside of God. So these are these things that are taught by the Kabbalist, the Ramchal, the great Kabbalist, the Ramchal, are the same, are basically the same principles as taught by Baruch Spinoza. Okay, so what my point here is to all of this, it's like you might say, okay, so what? So what about all of that? There's God and then there's everything else. Okay, what this has to do with identity is I want to destroy in you and anyone else who hears this any possibility of making the terrible mistake of confusing the existence of physical things with reality. Only that which is infinite and eternal is real. Only God, in other words, is real. Why? Because God is the only thing that's infinite and the only thing that's eternal. Both Baruch Spinoza and the Ramchal agree on that. And other philosophers, I'm sure, and other theologians. These are just two that I've picked out for their commonalities and their backgrounds. Okay, secondly, physical things exist bounded in space and time. That is, their existence is finite, both in terms of their physical measurements, meaning height, width, thickness, and their mass. Okay, so they're finite in that in those terms, and they're finite in time. That is, they're temporary. Okay, and they're conditioned, their existence, their very existence, is conditioned upon the continued will of God. When God ceases to keep in his divine mind the desire that this universe and everything in it, including man, should continue to be, when he ceases to have that desire, all of this will go away. Therefore, both the universe and man will cease to exist. You can describe the universe and man with the words, before they did not exist, now they exist, in the future they will cease to exist. But God you can describe as only is. But God is. There was no before God. There is no after God. There is only God. God is. Okay, I wanted to make, before we get into more, and this touches on the nature of man, of course, it certainly does, but I wanted to discuss those two major categories of existence. Existence that is essential, which is God, and existence, which is conditional, which is everything else. The creator versus the created. The eternal versus the temporary, the temporal. And I wanted to draw those distinctions by showing the similarities in teachings between Baruch Spinoza, the philosopher, and the Ramchal, the great Kabbalist. And we will go on from here. That will conclude today's teaching, and we'll go on from here on Monday. And perhaps then we'll move into the actual summary of Lorianic cosmogony. We'll see where the spirit takes us, the Ruach HaKodesh. In the meantime, don't forget to remember God at least twice a day. And until we meet again, may you go from strength to strength. Be well. Zygazunt.